This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The NBA draft is quickly approaching, but from a Cleveland Cavaliers perspective, we know that the draft means basically everything is on the table. We don't know if they're going to use the pick. We don't know if a bunch of trades are going to go down. We don't know anything. So to help us, because we don't know anything, we got a guest. Trevor Magnotti returns to the podcast, our draft expert, along with Carter Rodriguez, my co-host, who I am now going to ignore and go straight to Trevor. Trevor, how's it going, man?
Doing pretty good. It's nice to be able to care about the draft again, at least for this little bit until they trade the pick on Thursday, and then it was all for nothing. It's a really great time to be a Cavs fan and also a draft person.
Yeah, just you stole my first question, because I was like, because if they trade the pick, it probably means a good thing for the team's long-term health. But then you've wasted a bunch of time on the Cavs specifically. I guess like it helps that you cover it for everyone. You don't like have to cover it from a Cavs perspective where you're actually wasting time.
True. And I think the biggest thing that's helped with covering it from the Cavs perspective is I get to look at these guys and think, okay, how does this guy fit into a team that's actually going to compete right away? You know, we're not giving him the caveat of, oh, this guy's going to go to the Orlando Magic for 3 years. Who knows what he could become? Like, you actually have to kind of think about it in the lens of like, okay, what is this guy going to look like on a terrible team? And what is this guy going to look like on a contender? And it's actually helped kind of figure some stuff out. Particularly the guy that I think I've learned the most about through that is kind of Michael Porter, because you see all the things that have kind of come out on him in the last couple of weeks with his agent and kind of some opinions that he may not have. And you think, okay, you put that guy
on a lot of red caps.
Yeah. You put that guy on a contending team, especially one with LeBron and JR and everybody who's as outspoken as they are in a different direction, is that guy actually going to be able to survive in that way? And I think that that's been really valuable in kind of seeing a couple of these guys thinking, okay, this guy that I didn't have as high before, I think a little bit more highly of him now because I think he can get it a little bit quicker than maybe this other guy who is going to take a little bit longer to develop, needs maybe a couple 25 win seasons under his belt to kind of figure out what he's doing.
I think that's really interesting. I think that's a good way to break this down and just kind of the two different mindsets, because Carter and I talked about this on the last podcast, but we really do feel like draft night is basically going to be the signal of where this franchise is going. And it's funny, we both kind of noted that the conversation from Friday was, okay, LeBron's obviously orchestrating this, Kawhi's going to the Lakers, and now you have all these changes where Vegas has now made Phoenix the overwhelming favorite there, which I assume means they put the number one pick on the table. You're hearing less of that LeBron talk. He's meeting with the Cavs multiple times to discuss the future of the franchise, which I think when he's checked out mentally. Typically, you just see him cut off all communication. So I think you're seeing a shift. And if major deals go down on draft night, I think that would be a clear indicator that LeBron is going to be returning.
Yeah, I what I think is interesting is if they make that pick and they're not making it for someone else, I mean, what I found interesting is, you know, we've talked about a question I had for you, Trevor, just getting ready for this is we hear things like, oh, do they want to pick a guy who's best for a contender or a guy that's best for the future? And my question is it that if they're keeping the guy they draft, is that the same guy? Like, is there someone that you think they should take a swing on? Because like to me, it's like, If Wendell Carter's there at 8, and it seems like he very well could be, like, it feels like he's the pick either way. Like, does LeBron's presence really actually impact who they're going to pick, do you think?
I think it does less if they go with a big man and more if some of the guards and wings are available. I think that Wendell Carter and Mo Bamba both have really good potential if they're there to contribute right away to a contending team or to, you know, kind of cut their teeth with a rebuilding team. You know, Carter has such a high intellect and kind of a high awareness for what's going on the basketball court that I think he's going to be able to pick that up, particularly with LeBron right away. I think he's going to be able to get some good chemistry going there just because he's going to kind of understand how things work a little bit faster. Bamba, you know, just the fact that he could potentially be this guy that you can sit in the middle of the Cavs defense and when everything's breaking down in front of him, still get maybe one to two more possessions a half that goes positively for the team on defense. That's a huge change to how this team operates in the regular season. So I think both of them have a good chance of being good options for both situations. I think it's when you get into the wings and the guards where you start to see some differences there. Like Mikal Bridges, way more effective if LeBron's here than if you got a rebuilding team. He's kind of like a plug and play 3-and-D guy. So, you know, you can find a role for him, I think, right away. Whereas if he's, you know, your first piece in a rebuilding situation, I don't know that necessarily gets you anywhere. Trae Young's kind of the opposite, where I think if the Cavs are rebuilding and they take Young, okay, there's your guy that you're going to build your offense around. Whereas him coming in with LeBron, you kind of get into that same situation that we all worried about with him and Kyrie Irving at times, where, you know, how involved is Young going to be right off the bat on a team that's got LeBron and Love as creators? And is he going to be able to get the same amount of possessions and that he's going to need to be able to just make mistakes in the way that young guards kind of need to as they transition into the NBA.
He's an interesting one because, like, he might have to be a super high volume guy to survive.
Yeah.
Like the idea of, like, if he's so bad on defense that, like, he has to be absorbing 20 to 25% of possessions every time he's on the floor, no matter who he's with. Like, that was kind of like the Isaiah Thomas thing in a lot of
ways. I was about to say, you're basically describing Isaiah Thomas and the issues there.
Yeah, and I kind of describe him a lot more like, I kind of describe him in the Damian Lillard vein a little bit. I think he's a little bit better as a kind of team facilitator than Thomas is, but and I do trust his defense a little bit more than Thomas. You know, he's not 5'8".
Low bar.
He's 6'2", and he does have some room to grow in his body. I think that he can eventually get to the point where he is a little bit better on defense, just because I think a lot of his issues when they come down to it were strength and effort based as opposed to just him being, you know, 4 to 5 inches shorter than most of the guys he's defending. And I think that you can hide him in the right situation if you get him on the right team in a way that you just can't with Isaiah. So, you know, I'm a little bit less concerned about his defense, but I do think he's going to have to be kind of this high volume creator to have the value that he potentially could have, you know, when we talk about him getting potentially to an all-star level. And I just don't know that he's going to be able to get that on the Cavs.
Now, Trevor, just backtracking a little bit, I thought you said something that was interesting to me about both Wendell and Mo Bamba there. do you really think that these are guys that can step in and make an impact on defense right off the bat? Because when you look at rookies, even the ones that rookie bigs that become good defensive centers, you typically don't really see that leap until they really have an understanding of team defense and they have more experience and seasoning in the league around like 23, 24, 25 years old. Do you think that they're going to have an impact there, or is that maybe going to be something that maybe you see it in the regular season when teams aren't really scouting them, but might fall apart in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's kind of what I see with both guys. I think that Bamba is more likely to provide some kind of defensive value in his rookie season just because he has a 7'10" wingspan, and that goes a long way in the regular season. And I think that he potentially could have some issues still, particularly when it comes to finishing plays. He's not a guy who's always going to bust his butt on the defensive end, which is going to be a great fit for this Cavs locker room, but we'll see what happens there. Carter, I think, is going to be more with it in terms of getting himself in the right spots. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to potentially have more value in the playoffs just because he's going to kind of understand what the other team is going to throw at him. But he does have some limitations, particularly when it comes to his lateral agility and his strength a little bit. You know, he's a little bit undersized. He's not like 6'8" like Robert Williams, who's going to go a little bit later in the draft, but he's a little bit undersized for his position, and I think he's always going to have some limitations. What I was talking about more with him kind of assimilating very quickly is I think he would fit really well with what the Cavs want to do offensively. And I think that his awareness on the offensive end is going to make it so that he translates in an effective way very quickly.
One of
full-time center. Sorry, before we move on. is he splitting time at power forward or center? I can't figure out exactly his position because he is a little smaller.
Yeah, I think it depends on what the other guy that you're going to pair him with is going to be able to do defensively. Like, I think you can play him at the four next to Tristan Thompson. Tristan's going to be able to cover a little bit more ground and is going to be able to run a lot more as your primary pick and roll defender in a way that, you know, if you have Carter as your five, he may get a little bit exposed on that. I think you could probably play him as a five on offense and probably as a four or a five on defense. It kind of depends on what the lineup's going to be and kind of how your defensive system is going to be structured. For the Cavs, I would mainly think that he's probably going to be playing the five next to Kevin Love a fair amount, but you're most likely going to see him maybe as a four next to Tristan Thompson on a bench unit when they're getting Love some rest, or maybe giving him some small ball lineup minutes where it's him at the five, LeBron at the four, and you're just sacrificing defense because you're aiming to score 120 points per 100 possessions.
One of the questions we got in our Chase Down Discord chat was what the ceiling looks like for Wendell Carter. Is there a player comp, which I know always gets complicated, but what type of ceiling do you see with him?
Well, the obvious one that gets thrown around for everybody is Al Horford, just because of the versatility that he's going to be able to bring on that end. You know, I think he's a guy that's going to be able to create from the elbow a lot. He's going to be able to pick and pop. He can take some post possessions. I don't know that he's going to be quite the same level of post scorer as a lot of the other bigs in this draft. I think Bamba's a little better. Obviously, Ayton's a lot better in that regard, but I think he can do it a fair amount. I kind of liken him to his ceiling being what Marc Gasol brought on the Grizzlies, where he's able to do a little bit of scoring here and there, a little bit of spacing the floor, a little bit of post scoring, but his main value is going to be his passing. I think he potentially is when you adjust for position, he's the third best passer in this draft behind Trae Young and Luka Doncic. He's that good. He has amazing court vision. He has really good touch on his passes. And I think that you can get him generating looks from the elbow in a way that's very productive for the way that this offense offense is going to run. And I think that that's kind of his ceiling, is being used as a Marc Gasol like creator on the offensive end. Now, he's not going to have the same defensive value, which is going to be a problem, but I think you see him look a little bit more like Al Horford on defense, where he's going to get ripped apart by certain matchups, particularly more athletic guys. But for the most part, he's going to get himself in the right spot. He's not going to make mistakes, and he's going to be pretty engaged.
Trevor, you kind of broke my heart here a little bit, because I honestly think that you're one of the better kind of draft guys out there, and that you all consistently give good analysis, but you just sabotaged your own credibility, because you went from one sentence saying that he could be productive sharing the floor with Tristan Thompson, and then you compared him to Al Horford, who cannot be productive with Tristan Thompson on the floor. So I feel for you here.
But if you put Al Horford next to Tristan Thompson, no one can stop him.
Oh, it's actually a great point. I was going to say that I think I, for one, am thrilled to have another sweet passing big man at the elbow that the Cavs won't use.
Yeah. Just stand in the corner, please. Oh, God, that's heartbreaking. I don't even want to go there.
I don't know, man. First off, this is already like the most educational Chase Down pod we've ever
had. Yeah, which is probably a problem. Like, I feel like it's such a deviation, but that's okay. You know what? It's a crash course, because I don't really pay a ton of attention to the draft. And that's,
we're so dumb ultimately about this.
And even now, like, I probably should have paid more than I did, but just with the possibility of the pick being traded, which we will get into a little bit later after we get through a few more of these questions. It's just kind of sucked out all of my enthusiasm for looking into these prospects. But one that I obviously have a special connection to in my heart is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. ESPN had him going to the Cavs at 8 on the mock draft. I actually think this is interesting in a lot of different ways, because there was the report coming out of Toronto that they're basically willing to give up any player on their roster for a top 10 pick so that they can draft Shai. And to me, that's kind of interesting, because that 8 spot right there is kind of your place where you'd be guaranteed to get him. I can't see him going any higher than that. It seems a little bit ridiculous. Even at 8, it seems like a bit of a reach. But what is your impression of him, his jumper, and kind of how you would compare him to Trae Young at the point guard position?
Well, I think they're completely different players, and he's almost the antithesis of Trae Young. And I'm gonna start with the nice stuff, and then I'm gonna make my note. Chops, you're gonna want to earmuffs here in a couple minutes.
Be gentle with them. That's all I ask.
But yeah, I think Gilgeous-Alexander is potentially a really interesting player in the NBA, because he has really good feel for the game. He's a really good pick and roll creator. He can get to the rim consistently, and he has really good craft around there, and he's a good passer out of that. So he's got a good package for some point guard skills there. And his length and awareness on the defensive end make him a pretty good potential on-ball defender. So that's a pretty good package for a point guard to have. Where it gets interesting is projecting where his weaknesses are going to limit him when it comes to being a point guard. Because while he was a good catch and shoot three-point shooter at Kentucky, he hit 40.4% from three there. It only came on 57 attempts, which is about 2 per game, and he only hit 3 off the dribble threes his entire season. And
incidentally, that was 3 more than the rest of the Kentucky team combined.
True. I don't know if we'll get to Kevin Knox here at all, but yeah, the big reason for that. But Shai, I think he really needs that pull-up jumper if he's going to be an effective point guard in the NBA. He needs some kind of threat of an outside shot, because otherwise you can just pack the paint on him, and it's really going to be difficult for him to have that same kind of impact at the level of a Trae Young might, because what Trae Young has a similar passing ability, and also has that ability to just jack it up from 35 feet whenever he wants. So I really wonder what that's going to look like. I also am a little bit concerned about Gilgeous-Alexander's athletic ability, just when it comes to defending NBA level athletes. I don't think that he's the best at moving laterally, especially in the pick and roll. He struggles a little bit when he has to defend bigger guys as well, particularly going to the rim. He's got just these little things that make that are basically what are going to separate him from being a surefire top 10 pick and being a guy who goes in the back half of the lottery, and you kind of struggle to figure out what his role is in the NBA. And I think that's my biggest limitation for him. I think that he's a decent option. He's a player I like, and I think is going to be a rotation player in the NBA. I just don't know what that role is going to be. And I don't think that he's solidified enough in that regard to really take a chance on him at 8. Now, if the Raptors want to do that and they want to gift the Cavs a couple nice rotation pieces to be able to make that happen, I'm all ears for that. But I don't know that he's a good option for the Cavs to take at that position.
I feel like he's like a George Hill. Like that, yeah. That would kind of be my player comp for him.
Yeah, I like to kind of call him Avery Bradley, but normal shooting guard sized. Like that's kind of what I project for him. Just a really good space defender and catch and shoot 3-point shooter who never really gets a chance to take or to make use of his point guard skills because that shooting off the dribble is such a problem.
Well, 6'6" Avery Bradley sounds like a pretty good player to me.
Mm-hmm.
Carter,
I'm just gonna go. I feel like maybe this isn't the best structure, but I'm gonna do it just because I have all these questions about these guys, and I just want to keep rattling them off because I think
I think it's working.
Other people would too. I fucking hated watching Michigan State this year, so I just didn't. and I know that you love Jaren Jackson. I know everyone on draft Twitter loves Jaren Jackson, but I can't shake the fact that it bothers me that he didn't put up counting stats. I know he didn't play a ton of minutes, but it bothers me. And I'm also like a little nervous about that rebounding. I don't think he was, isn't that a little more, I feel like people are so thrilled with his pros that they're kind of overlooking any cons. Like when you hear any draft guy talk about Jackson, you don't hear much negativity. Do you think people are jumping the shark here, or am I just way off because I didn't like watching them play, so I didn't watch them enough?
Yeah, I think if there's one fault with how draft Twitter talks about Jaren Jackson is it takes too much stock in the context of what Michigan State was this year, where they had basically 5 big men that they were rotating around and almost a 6th when you consider that Miles Bridges probably should have been playing a lot more power forward than he was. And Jackson was playing out of position the entire year. And part of what that did was it put Nick Ward, who was their starting center, in position. Fatty. Yeah, in position to basically just carve out the restricted area and just grab every defensive rebound, and made Jaren Jackson chase everybody around the perimeter and pick and roll. And I think that has some validity to it. I think that used in a different way, Jackson's going to be a better rebounder. You know, he did put up some pretty low numbers, but he did still average 10.6 rebounds for 40 minutes. That's pretty solid. That's not anything spectacular for 5, especially in this class when you've got Bagley and Robert Williams both putting up 13-14 per 40. But I think that the rebounding concerns are a little bit oversold. What I'm a little bit more concerned about is he going to be the top flight offensive player that he seemed to show in stretches? Because when he put the ball on the deck and he was able to take advantage of a slow footed Big Ten center, he looked like an all NBA type player. He looked like Cat moving towards the basket almost. But I don't know if that's actually going to be what he looks like in the NBA, because he, against NBA level athletes, probably isn't going to have that quickness advantage always. And I don't know if his offensive profile is going to allow him to have that ceiling that everyone thinks he does if he doesn't have that little bit of an off of the dribble game to keep teams honest. So I think that there's definitely reason to be a little bit low on him, especially for the reasons that you mentioned. I think the context of how that team was put together, which was terribly.
I hated watching them, man. I'm telling you, we had them on at work all the time, and I just could not pay attention.
It was just
such a snooze.
That Syracuse game, their guards were terrible too. Was so fitting for how that season went because they just got strangled. And that's what watching them was like almost. It was like being watching a team slowly suffocate themselves, and then Syracuse actually did it to them. But I think
it's a kinky team.
That's hot.
Very hot.
I think there's definitely a reason to kind of back off of the hype. I think that ultimately I like him very highly. I have him second in this draft, mainly because I think that he can do a lot of different things, and there's a lot of different potential roles he can play in the NBA. And it really doesn't matter where he lands, because as we saw last season, he was in a position that was pretty much the worst that he probably could have been for his skill set, and he still found a way to be productive. And I think that that's going to be true no matter where he goes in the NBA. I like his baseline a little bit better than some of the other guys, and that's why I have him pretty high.
Speaking of sex, Woj has Orlando taking Sexton at 6. One of the questions we had in our Discord from Hayden is what you think of Sexton's jumper and whether or not that's actually going to be something that he has in the NBA.
Yeah, that's the ultimate question for him, because I like everything else in his game. I like that he can get to the rim at a decent level. I like his wingspan. I like his competitiveness. I actually am a little bit higher on his decision making than a lot of people are. It's can he shoot? And I think that he potentially could. I think that the big thing for him is going to be getting more confident pulling up. I think that he kind of almost has the gears going a little bit slow when he's coming out of the pick and roll, and that affects his pull-up jumper. It ends up being contested a lot more than it probably should be. He doesn't have that lightning quick decision making to, you know, make that decision when the big drops back that he's going to go ahead and pull up if he has a little bit of space. It takes him a little bit of an extra quarter second, and that ends up being the difference. So I think that he can get better as a decision maker. He's definitely a guy that I would put in that probably needs a few 20 win seasons to kind of get things put together camp when it comes to young guards. But I think there's a path for him to be able to develop that shot. And I like everything else in this game if he does.
Well, how would you compare him to Shea?
I have him at about the same level just in terms of the value that they have right now, because I think there's the same level of risk, but in different ways. I think that you're risking with Shea, I think that you're risking the potential that he never develops an offensive game that's meaningful, and he's only this kind of seventh, eighth man, a plug-in defensive player. Whereas for Sexton, you're worried that, you know, he never really puts it together in terms of kind of playing within a team and getting that shot. And he ends up being a guy that just averages 18 points a game and does it on lottery teams for his entire career.
Both ahead of Young?
No, I have Young third in this class. I'm very, very high on his potential. And I think that he is far and away the best pure point guard in this class. I have him in the top five. I probably have.
Okay. So you do have them behind Young.
Yes. Yeah. So I have Young in the top five. I have Gilgeous Alexander and Sexton both kind of around the like 10 to 14 range back half of the lottery.
Okay.
The thing that interests me about Young is that it's so hard to evaluate him because he had so few opportunities just to get an easy look.
Yep.
I mean, as much as I didn't want to watch Michigan State, I mean, I watched a ton of Oklahoma this year, and really, I mean, there's nothing else to watch other than that the white power forward, I think Manic, who could kind of shoot a little bit. But I think what was the stat? He had 19 uncontested shots all year or something like that.
Yeah, 19 uncontested threes, and he made 14 of them.
That's so outrageous. Something I thought was interesting is, like, I've seen a lot of people critique Lon Kruger for how he used Trae Young and how he ran that team at Oklahoma this year. But, like, my devil's advocate to that was, like, we always critique these coaches for being so, like, beholden to their system that they don't let their kids do anything. Like, that team didn't have a lot of options beyond high pick and roll.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. And I thought he did fine. Like, he had a couple games that were super inefficient, but like those never really, I guess they didn't hurt him. Like, but him going crazy, continuing that outrageous run, like, could have only helped him. Like, I didn't hold those games against him.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with Oklahoma was we watched a worse player do the same thing 2 years ago, and he made the Final Four. Like, Buddy, they did the same thing with Buddy Hield, and it worked. So, like, the college guys that were clamped at the idea that Young never passed to his teammates was crazy, because it's like we literally just watched this work for them, and it just happens that the team is worse this year. Like, it's not the players.
Dean Latin is like a ninth year player still just fumbling through pick and roll dives to the rim. Yeah, I just thought he was really interesting. But one of the questions we got from Mason in our Discord chat, exclusive to Patreon subscribers, by the way, boys, Mason kind of was just interested in things about Trey that weren't about his shooting or defense, because those are obviously hammered into the ground ad nauseum. What I'm interested in from you is his finishing, because with the Steph comparison that we got all year, pretty much the big thing was, oh, well, like, Steph is turned into a really good finisher at the rim, and Trey does not finish well at the rim. Do you think that's something he'll learn? Or do you think it's just always going to be a limitation for him because he's not that fast, he's not that big, and he's not that strong?
I think it's going to be a little bit of a limitation for him. I think that he can get better, but I don't think that he's going to be able to get to the Steph level. I think that he doesn't have the same frame that Steph does. Steph was able to put on a little bit more muscle. I mean, he's still pretty small, but Young is a lot smaller than him, and I don't know that he's going to be able to put on the same muscle mass. I do like the amount of craft that Young has. He can change directions of the ball when he's in the air. He can finish with either hand. He can kind of wrap around defenders. He's got a basic package of those moves that help guys like him that struggle with just powering through contact. But I think that he's always going to have a little bit of a limitation. I don't think he's ever going to get to the point where he's a reliable finisher at the NBA level, just because anytime that he gets a little bit of contact, the shot's going to probably change wildly.
He also, like, doesn't have very long arms, and sometimes, yeah, I think that matters. You know, like, when you have T-Rex arms, like, you can't generate those weird angles to flip the ball up. Like, I mean, for as good of a player as he is, I've never seen a superstar get his shot packed like he did at times at Oklahoma. And, yeah, that's teams, like, hyper-collapsing, but, like, part of finishing is creating those angles that avoid, you know, the shot blocker, you know. And I don't know if he, with the short arms and the lack of explosion and the lack of strength, I think it's just tough for him to create those angles.
Yeah, and I don't think he's ever going to really be able to turn that into foul drawing in the way that Curry and Kyrie and guys who have struggled with that finishing early on in their careers but never really developed that full strength have been able to. I think that he's always going to have that limitation because of that short wingspan. He's not going to be able to compensate for that by just getting to the line a ton.
I'll say this, though. Like, I mean, as long as he's able to shoot at a really, really high level, I don't think it's a huge problem, because, like, we've seen it with Steph. Like, Steph shoots such a good percentage of the rim, not because he's one of the best finishers in the NBA. That's the difference between, like, just reading the stat sheet and watching. He shoots the highest percentage in the league because he just walks to the rim as guys, yeah, fly at him from three.
Yeah. Or he gets those back cuts that he hates to do, but get him open looks every time at the rim.
Yeah, I think that I like to think of Young's offensive value as it's probably going to be more Steve Nash than Steph, just because I think that his passing is going to end up being a lot more effective in the NBA than even the shooting is. He's just so creative with the ball, and he has such a strong repertoire. I mean, it's really hard for college level guys to be able to make some of those cross court passes with both their dominant hand and non-dominant hand. It takes a little bit of time to get the confidence to be able to make that type of play on those skip passes out of the pick and roll to a popping big or skipping to the corner. And Trey's already ready to do that. I think that his passing is a lot undervalued, partly because a lot of the guys that he was passing to weren't able to actually hit the shot that resulted. But I think that he's going to be able to put that to a lot more use, and he's going to look a lot more Nash than he is Steph in terms of how he brings value to an offense.
You have my curiosity, but now you have my attention. Steve Nash. Now I'm getting excited. Now I'm going to be sad when they trade the pick.
Actually, sorry to keep filibustering here, not letting Justin get in a word edgewise, but I did want to ask something about the passing with Young, because I think we all saw him make these excellent skip passes to the corners, the ones that everyone gets rock hard over every time they see a clip of Luka doing it. I'm interested in this because this is something I noticed, and I mean, I think everyone knows his turnover rate was really, really high at Oklahoma last year, Trey Young. And I'm wondering, like, so he can see the passes. Do you think he'll get to the point where he actually can put the zip on them like LeBron does? You know, like one of the underrated things about LeBron is how the degree to which he can fire the ball at someone accurately. Like how many of these Trey Young passes in college turn into pick sixes in the NBA?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. That's honestly the thing that separates him and Doncic for me. And to counter your comment there, that's what puts Doncic over the top, is he gets that zip along with it. And I think that Young, it's getting there. I think that he's got it on some of the skip passes. He needs to develop a little bit more touch, I think, on the pick and roll passes, you know, the little dump offs and pocket passes. That's where he ended up fumbling a lot of times in the stuff I've seen, is he just can't thread the needle at that level. So I think that's a little bit of an issue. I think part of some of those cross court issues that he had and throwing a few pick sixes in the Big 12 was he's anticipating his teammates to get in a position that college guys aren't going to be able to get to. And I think that that's going to resolve itself a little bit in the NBA when things are more consistent. Guys know a little bit more of the spots that they need to be in. I think that'll kind of help him cut down a little bit of it too, is I think he was kind of operating at a little bit higher level of understanding of what the offense was supposed to look like at times than anyone else on the floor. And that went for the defense and the offense. So I think that kind of impacted it a little bit as well.
So what do we think our draft night ideals are for the Cavs? Obviously it could go one of two ways. We still don't know which way they're going. I don't think any of us would have an ideal scenario where the Cavs don't keep LeBron this summer. I think you'd want to stay relevant as long as possible. So I think we can go off that as kind of the foundation there and the assumption. But to me, it's really interesting where this goes. I think if you do see Shea get picked by the Cavs at 8, it means he's getting traded immediately to the Toronto Raptors, and that would get really interesting. To see what type of guys that they'd be offering there. Carter, I'll start with you first. What's kind of your hope and your ideal? Because you haven't talked enough on this podcast. So what do you want to see happen?
Sorry, man.
I know when I pick my spots, man. I know that draft talk is not my strength, so I'm going to make other people around me look smart by shutting up and letting them talk. So don't mind me here. I'm just minding my role. I'm Jose Calderoning this shit. Like,
it's just interesting because it's like, you know, like I have like this base level knowledge, and then I see kind of where the discourse goes, and I just like, I think it's really nice having someone like Trevor who knows what the hell he's talking about, has really actually done the homework instead of talking out his ass like we do every week. So I'm taking advantage. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I don't know. In terms of ideal scenarios, it's really tough to know. I still feel like the Paul George thing just makes too much sense. If it's going to happen, it just seems so easy. once, you know, if as long as LeBron can convince him to come, which I don't see why he wouldn't be able to if he's like, hey, I'm staying, you got to come, you know, and I guess Paul George could play hardball, but it's tough to know. I don't love, and this isn't as clean of an answer, I don't love Kemba.
Kemba, I don't either.
No. It just causes me, I think I'd learn to love him as a player on my favorite team. But from a competitive standpoint, I just see a guy who's going to get picked on, who's going to get attacked every single possession.
I think he's going to be great throughout the year. And he's one of those guys that's going to struggle to score against Golden State.
I think that's probably fair. So, yeah, I guess my ideal is something in the neighborhood of like honestly, I'd be okay just adding Paul George if they can't just adding Paul George. I'm not as hot on this McCollum for Love talk as other people are. I'm not sure CJ McCollum's better than Kevin Love, even though the internet wants you to think he is.
No, I don't think so. But to me, it's interesting because if you're adding Paul George along with that, I think you make up for whatever possible drop off you have in the front court there with the drop off to CJ McCollum. Like at that point, it just becomes a fit thing. That McCollum's a guy that you can play at the point alongside LeBron that's going to just go out there and get you buckets. And then you have Paul George, who in terms of what actual talent you're giving up, in terms of returning players, like whether it's matching salary along with the eighth pick, I think that obviously you make up for the absence of talent there, and it just becomes a fit thing at that point where you'd want to have CJ alongside LeBron and Paul George.
Yeah, I mean, I think the appealing thing about a Love for CJ trade is that for both teams, they just make a little more like traditional basketball sense.
Right, and
like,
you're setting both
Blazers' best two players are a guard and a big. The Cavs are able to slot LeBron at the four in crunch time in their best lineups. Without necessarily sacrificing their defense. But it's tough, you know. I think that and I think obviously everyone would love CJ because he's a Northeast Ohio guy, but I'm just not quite ready to say, and I'm not ready to give up extra assets, which it sounds like it would take. And like maybe rightfully so, but for this team, I don't know.
Your get us meter is pretty low, Carter. You just moved back to Columbus and it hasn't sunk
in. I went to Applebee's for dinner tonight. I get us.
Oh fuck, what did you have? I want to pivot here. What did you have at Applebee's, seeing as you like to critique what I eat?
We naturally did the 2 for $20, one of the best deals
hell yeah.
in the fast casual game. Our appetizer was the spinach and artichoke dip because Kylie loves it.
Yeah, it's a banger.
Then I got a burger that was bottom 10 burger I've ever had. I ate half of it.
Carter is not eating good in the hood. Trevor, what did you eat today? What was your dinner?
I can't say it was anything interesting. Just some grilled chicken. Nice and plain. Oh.
I couldn't possibly say.
We went from ideal things on draft night to ideal dinners, which Carter's is obviously Applebee's.
I honestly
think that if the Cavs are going the direction of keeping LeBron and moves are made to go in that direction, that the Cavs are going to end up with one of CJ McCollum, Kemba Walker, or Kyle Lowry, which Lowry I think would come with a young player as well. But I think that would be the move. They're probably looking to add one of those guards. And hopefully that would also come with Paul George. Cause I think we can all agree that even if they aren't giving up a ton, that's not enough to get them over the hump.
That's fair. I don't know, man. It doesn't feel like Kemba's enough.
Can you imagine if they get Lowry?
That would be so weird.
Can you imagine if they get like Lowry and Jakob Poeltl, or Lowry and
Mort would OG. Resign.
Let's get OG.
Yeah,
like, Mort would resign. Mort's been intentionally misspelling Jakob Poeltl's name on Twitter all year.
I feel like the last 12 months have just been the greatest test of all time. Like I'm more okay with Kemba than I would have been a year ago because I went through Isaiah Thomas. So it's almost like you go as far the other direction as possible and just get the most difficult all-star point guard that you could possibly watch in IT, and then you work your way back up to Kemba, where you're able to stomach it a little bit more. But Kyle Lowry would be funny, especially just because of the sheer volume of jokes that we've gone off about Lowry over the last couple of years.
I'm telling you, Moore will resign if that happens. It's it's over. Trevor, what's your ideal draft?
It's just...
Think on your feet. Pressure, pressure, pressure.
Whatever's the least Dan Gilbert thing. I'm just sitting here like, yeah, everything that you're saying is great, but it's Michael Porter Jr. That's what's happening. That's what I've already resigned myself to. Like, just in the back of my head, it's this little buzzing sound, and it's the fact that I don't trust anyone. I don't trust anything that this team does, and there's always that little baseline of it, and especially when that comes to the draft, and we know what Dan likes, and I think he's going to try to hit the home run swing and try to think a little bit outside the box. So I'm a little bit scared of that. I think that my ideal situation would probably be this Raptors thing coming to fruition, just because it's just such a colossally stupid idea for Toronto to pursue. With all of the other talent that would be on the board, to trade one of your core pieces to get Gilgeous Alexander is not a smart decision. I think that the Cavs benefiting from that would be just perfect. Another example of Toronto allowing the Cavs to extend a run in the East a little bit longer than they probably should have.
Jesus. I think you're going to be okay with Porter Jr. I actually, coming into the year, I had him as kind of my top guy in the class. So I wouldn't be opposed to him falling. Obviously the personality and political leanings could clash a little bit with his locker room, but it seems like there's a lot of momentum building towards the Kings taking him at number two, even though he doesn't want to go there.
On a slightly different note, because once again, I think if they draft Michael Porter Jr. and he's on the team, it probably means LeBron James isn't on the team. So, like, I'm fine with that, because I think it's a long-term build. But to that point about LeBron being off the team, if, let's say, the Cavs are not able to generate anything that they think is worth generating by Thursday night, they have the best offer for that Grizzlies pick if they want it, right?
I gotta think so. I mean, I think that... They can probably absorb Parsons' contract if the Grizzlies want to make that dump. I really think that they can offer a couple young guys if they want. I think that it's a pretty good deal. I just haven't seen anything that made sense from anyone else's or from the Grizzlies' perspective to be able to make that trade down. I think that the Cavs, you know, they potentially are giving the Grizzlies either eight and a couple young pieces. They're giving them Love and a couple young pieces, whatever is needed to kind of make that deal work. I think that they've got a very good shot at it, and it'll be really interesting to see what ends up with that, because I think a lot of what comes down to what the Grizzlies are going to do is going to be what the Kings do and what the Hawks do, because I think the Grizzlies have certain guys in mind, and that if those guys are still there, because the Kings did something like draft Michael Porter Jr., even though he doesn't want to go there. I think that they may still very well make the pick. So I'm not holding out hope for that, but I think that's a very valid option that's on the table. And I think that changes the calculus a little bit, because then that can make that deal for whoever, whether it's Walker or whatever, maybe they can aim their sights a little bit higher, or it makes that deal a little bit sweeter.
Right.
Or potentially, you know, they set themselves, or if they, or they can make that deal and it doesn't tell us that LeBron is there or not. I think that that's kind of the confusing thing. If they pulled the trigger on that right away and they draft, you know, Ayton or not Ayton, they draft Bagley, or they draft, get Luka Doncic, I think that still means that things could go either way, because you're getting your star potential hit right there. And we don't know if that's enough to convince LeBron if they can't do anything else. So that would be a really, really interesting way for this draft to unfold that I don't really know what would come of it.
I feel like this is going to be one of the more crazy drafts we've seen, especially now if like Kawhi goes to Phoenix with the first overall pick.
Or Kawhi comes to Cleveland for the fourth and eighth after they trade for the Grizzlies fourth for Love.
I'm not even going to open myself up to that. Hashtag soon, saying, though.
Four and eight's pretty good. Though. Four and eight's pretty good, man. That's a pretty good offer.
Yeah.
In this draft, at least.
Yeah, Pop definitely wants to help build a super team. That seems like what he likes to do.
Pop loves LeBron.
That's true. I actually got a good laugh watching High Noon, because Bomani was talking about, he's like, the saying is, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Pop thought LeBron was one of his friends, then he's getting Kawhi the fuck up out of town. You gotta keep him a little bit closer.
Oh man, I don't know, man. It's just really interesting to see what they do. I mean, honestly, if the Cavs are under the impression they don't think LeBron's coming, I think you definitely. I mean, I've seen some people like very unhappy with the idea of having to take on Parsons' contract and send Love out to get four.
I'm okay with like the lottery,
but dude, it's like a
Chandler Parsons.
I'm not cool with that. He's broken and terrible.
No,
but yeah, it's a salary dump. That's what the Grizzlies are doing.
The Cleveland nightlife is going to bring him back to life, and it's
that's actually a decent point. It's like what happened with JR, where he said he just had to stay in. But like, I don't know, man. Like
from a town like Cuban.
Yeah, like I would be okay giving up Love to take on Parsons and four if we're going for total rebuild. Because you send Love to like what all of a sudden looks like a pretty good situation, which matters to me. And I know that's not how good front offices should work, but I'm allowed to be sentimental. And then you get 4 and 8. Like there are a lot worse ways to rebuild than to start a rebuild with the fourth overall pick and the eighth overall pick in a very, very deep draft.
I want to be really sad to see Kevin Love go. I think he's gone.
Dude, me too. That's why I don't want to take him anywhere. I don't want to send him anywhere. That's a bummer.
Well, I mean, Memphis is kind of depressing, but it would at least be a
healthy Conley and Gasol. You can talk yourself into it, them being fun.
That's a fun little 6-7 seed, I think. But I think this is the last week Kevin Love's on the Cavs. I think he's getting traded on draft night, no matter what happens.
Hope not. But we'll be able to talk ourselves into this stupid team no matter what, right?
Yeah, we're pretty damn good at that. But I think we've kind of exhausted everything. Is there anything you guys want to talk about before we wrap this up?
I'm all good. Oh, Trevor, Justin and I both think Luka Doncic looks like he's playing in a video at 80% speed.
Yeah, he's slower than Anthony Bennett's metabolism. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, we actually have game tape of Luka against Anthony Bennett, and we're at least above that level. No, I think that the big thing that the EuroLeague kind of masks is just the court looks a little bit smaller in the way that we don't see in college. So these guys look a little bit slower because they don't have the same amount of space to be able to get up to full speed. You know, I think the EuroBasket stuff, he looked a lot quicker. He was on par with NBA guys.
I think EuroBall is like the reverse of an IG, honey, that's working the angles. It's got a bad angle.
It definitely is. I mean, there are a couple of these arenas that are just always have a base level of smoke in them from flares that have gone off in the pregame. This is a real thing that happens there. Like, they definitely do sabotage their quality of broadcasts to an extent.
There you go.
Yeah, it is funny because like I do like I love watching Luka play. I just haven't like shaken that anxiety. It's like sometimes I worry that I feel like I'm talking myself into him because I want him to be good.
Oh,
I'm
gonna be broken if he sucks. Like,
you're going to have a really tough time selling people on Euros.
To at least try to convince people that he's going to be okay. And if he's absolute garbage, I'm done. I'm
that's what I wish I'm NBA walking into was the better sense. At acknowledging. I wish they were better at like, hey, he might not be great.
I mean, the batting average for European prospects is probably very similar to the ones that are come up in the United States. Like, you look at the picks that missed, but because those guys are like the one Euro in the top 10 this year, and if that guy misses, then all of a sudden all the Euros in the top 10 missed. When you always have busts and there's always risks that come with these guys.
Meanwhile, we're very sure that DeAndre Ayton's going to be this superstar when Jahlil Okafor happened. There you go. That was for you, Carter.
God damn, that's a great place to wrap.
Trevor hates Ayton. It's amazing. Hating Ayton.
Hating Ayton. I love it. He shouldn't even be drafted. But Trevor, even though you have hot takes about DeAndre Ayton, we still appreciate you coming on. For all our listeners, check out him on Twitter at TMagnotti. We will tweet it out in the description as well. So be sure you give him a follow. I also want to thank all our Patreon pledges that we got over the last week. I'm pretty sure I'm speaking for Carter as well when I say I'm just absolutely blown away by this. We have covered our operating costs, and now we're just looking for what to do with the surplus. We're definitely going to have contests and giveaways throughout the year, and just look to put this money back into the podcast and to help it grow. So thank you so much.
We got to get Dan Rowell to design us some t-shirts or some shit.
Yeah, we should get in the t-shirt game. We should. I think that.
Join the economy.
From a distance, join the Cleveland t-shirt economy.
Yeah, I was going to say there's not enough like Cavs t-shirts out there, and there's not enough people doing that. So let's continue hustling backwards and finding ways to break into markets that are thoroughly saturated. But we really do appreciate it. I think we've also had a ton of fun in the Discord chat. When you do become a patron from $5 and up, you get access to the Discord chat that we have. So we're having a lot of fun there talking about the draft, potential things with LeBron, rumors and crap that we're hearing. So shout out to all our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, we really appreciate you guys. I think we're up to 23 patrons right now.
Lit.
It's crazy. I can't believe any of you are supporting the pod like this. We're definitely going to try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for being a part of this, guys. We're having a blast talking to you guys in the Discord. So anyone else who wants to join the conversation, pony up them five.
Yeah, yeah. Give us your money, please. So thanks to Carter. Thanks to Trevor. Thanks to our listeners. Remember, you can subscribe. You can help out the podcast the old school way by subscribing, leave a rating and a review. So we will probably have some draft reactions coming later this week, because I think things are about to get wild. So thanks to our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs. We'll be right back.